Becoming a mom wasn't taboo, so why are the conversations? Having the space to be transparent and keeping the conversations real, highlighting women who are making motherhood and business work, all while making an impact. I'm your host, Antonia, and welcome to Talk Space & Co. Conversations for dope moms and company. Company, how are we? How are we adjusting? How are we doing? Before we hop into today's episode, I just wanted to do like a quick check-in. So how are y'all feeling? You know, we are on day, I don't even know. I haven't counted. I lost count. We are on day whatever it is of social distancing. And I feel like we're still trying to adjust, regardless of, you know, oh yeah, you know, we're getting into a routine. I feel like this new norm, it's gonna take a little bit, you know? But I wanted to check in with you all. So if you haven't already, be sure to download our mobile app in the Apple App Store, Google Play Store, and jump on the app and go to Moms Link Up and then head over to Talkspace where we can start the conversation. Like, let's check in. Let's keep each other accountable on some of the things that we want to do as far as like maybe staying active or maintaining, you know, what we have going on. Maybe we're deep cleaning our houses and all these other things that we could possibly be doing with our time. But let's check in. Let's talk, right? Talk space. Anyway, you guys, let's get into today's review of the week. And today's review comes from PMP Power. Dope combos. Antonia is so dope and dynamic. She has so much poise and asks all the right questions. Just listen to the episode with Marlo. I just knew Marlo from Housewives of Atlanta, but saw the different layers in this episode. Never knew her life story or early influences. This podcast is golden, and Mommy Minute is plugged in. Shout out to Mommy Minute. Just connecting with you all on Instagram has been super dope. I love the fact that you all are two dads. Like, who would have thought, you know, to give moms that minute that they need and to talk about it. And just meeting your wives over these dope Zoom meetings and thank you so much for tuning in. I definitely enjoyed the episode with Marlo myself because, again, like you said, I never knew that much of her life and just know her from, you know, Housewives of Atlanta. But it was definitely a great episode to do and record. And she was just so easy and fun to talk to, like completely different, you know, and I loved it. And now when I watch Real Housewives of Atlanta, Marlo is it. So, for today's episode, you guys, can we break the stigma on therapy? Repeat after me. Therapy is good, not bad. Have you guys seen Finding Nemo? That's where I got that from. Fish are friends, not food. Anyway, getting off topic. But, guys, let's break the stigma on therapy. Therapy, I feel like there doesn't need to be anything wrong with you to have therapy. It's just so good to just have a conversation. Like, podcasting here is so therapeutic. And now when you fit someone else in who's like doesn't know you from anywhere, but can help you navigate through certain things in your life, it is so beautiful. Today's episode, I had the opportunity to sit down with Stephanie Nichols, owner of Mindful Therapy Works, and April Humes, a mental health counselor who has provided couples therapy and individual therapy to talk about how therapy, mindfulness, all plays a part in motherhood. So let's talk. All right. So I am joined by licensed therapist Stephanie Nichols and April Humes. Stephanie, why don't you start by telling us about yourself?
Sure. Thank you for having me. I am Stephanie Nichols. I am a licensed clinical social worker who is able to practice in the state of Georgia. I've been in the field of social work for about 10 years now, a little over 10 years. And I've worked in a variety of places like inpatient settings, EAPs, and I finally settled on working in a private practice. So I own my private practice now called Mindful Therapy Works. It is in Atlanta, Georgia. I see older adolescents and women 18 and up that suffer from anxiety and depression. And so I'm just solo, you know, doing the private practice for almost 5 years. It will be 5 years. And as far as myself, you know, I love spending time with my family, my friends. I love yoga. Not quite a yogi, but an inspiring yogi. And that is some about me.
Nice. How about you, April?
All right. So thank you for having me as well. I am a licensed professional counselor and licensed mental health counselor, depending on the state. I've been in the field of mental health for a little over 10 years. Stephanie and I actually met in one of our first jobs together, working for an agency company, which is a really cool kind of connection. And so I'm also a military spouse. I've moved around a lot, which is why I have so many licenses. I'm licensed in 4 states, Florida now, my most recent one, New Jersey, Washington State, and Georgia.
Wow.
I've spent time, it's a lot to keep up with, but it's absolutely worth it. I'm very passionate about the field of mental health, about educating people on, you know, how to live a healthy life. And I've been really fortunate to be able to work with populations I'm really passionate about, work with women, survivors of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, work with military. And right now I'm working for myself really, but as a mental health consultant for the World Trade Center Health Program, supporting first responders of 9/11.
Wow.
So dealing with anxiety and trauma are the things that I really enjoy working with, and I hope to be able to continue to help bring some healing to our nation. And
yeah, I'm going to save my question for you at the end, but we're going to get right into it. And speaking from the world of moms, the majority of us experience mental fatigue. What toll does mental fatigue take on one's body?
It can range. It can really run from mild symptoms to severe symptoms. And sometimes we don't even know that the toll is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people, your body moves at your stress before you do a lot of times.
Mm.
You know, so sometimes we don't even realize what's going on, and our body is speaking to us, letting us know that something is going on and something has to be addressed. So it could be, you know, mild kind of just getting headaches or just feeling achy to more severe symptoms, high blood pressure, you know. So the symptoms can range on what mental fatigue and stress can do to your body.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'd just like to say that, you know, I think a lot of times with moms, especially new parents, we kind of chalk up a lot of, you know, the things that we might be feeling, that fatigue as normal fatigue. So if we're telling people, you know, constantly that we're feeling tired, they might just say, well, you know, that's just a part of being a mom, and they might not actually have a full picture of what's really going on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there's normal fatigue, but then there's also, fatigue in itself is indication of a problem. There's a normal amount of being tired, but fatigue is something very different, and going on for a long time can wreak real havoc on the body.
Yeah. How can, I guess, is there any way to really define the two or separate the two? Because some will just pass it off as, oh, I'm just tired, but not really knowing the severity of it.
I would say with any kind of fatigue or mental health concerns, we as therapists always look for like a change in your normal functioning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be important for you to kind of, you know, take a moment and see, okay, I used to get this amount of sleep, Now I'm not. I used to be able to concentrate for, you know, longer periods of 10 minutes, and now I can't. So really, you have to kind of assess your normal level of functioning, which is different for, you know, it's different for everyone, but assess that and also think about, like, how long has this been going on? And we do have, like, high stress situations, but like April said, if it's prolonged, that's when the stress causes harm on the body. Mm-hmm. So I feel it's a twofold process in kind of assessing that.
Nice. Okay. And I guess just getting into the world of postpartum as well. Postpartum is something we continuously discuss here on Talkspace & Co. How does one differentiate between being mentally exhausted and postpartum depression?
I'd say mentally exhausted versus postpartum depression. I think, too, within that first two-week period, it's not qualified or classified as postpartum. It's qualified as just the baby blues. So that's one thing to consider as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really, you know, normal level of functioning, like I was kind of saying before, talking to your doctor, what is normal, what is not normal, what I should be able to do and not do, and just being mindful of how you're taking care of yourself, the thoughts that are playing out internally, you know, are you getting a good grasp on the thoughts, or are you very anxious, are you very depressed? Just kind of looking at those symptoms.
Okay.
There's, you know, usually a lot of other, you know, symptoms that are going to be accompanying that feeling of fatigue, you know, like Stephanie talked about, noticing a change in, like, your personality, a change in the way that you deal with and interact with people. If you're very agitated and easily annoyed, things like that are also indicators that it's not just, you know, normal feeling tired because you just, you know, you're bringing your child into the world. It is something a little more serious.
Okay.
Right. And we don't want to, like, forget about, you know, if thoughts of hurting yourself or hurting your child come up, you know what I mean? That is something that's not supposed to be ignored at all, but can also be a severe symptom of ongoing depression, of ongoing just not feeling like you can get a grasp on things. A lot of times, mm-hmm. we don't like to discuss that or put that out there,
mm-hmm.
but that is a symptom that we all should be very mindful if the fatigue is getting a little too much and thoughts have gone awry.
Okay.
Yeah. And typically with postpartum depression, like, there are, you know, not always, but there are some signs, you know, even before the baby is born. And it is, a lot of it has to do with, you know, societal pressures and things that people place certain expectations on mothers. But it's like, you know, if you're going through pregnancy and you don't feel super excited about it, like, those sorts of things can be normal.
Yeah.
And so it's important for people to remember that too. But if, you know, if you are having thoughts like, you know, I don't want this child to be born, or having, you know, severe thoughts of, like, hurting yourself or not wanting the pregnancy anymore, those are things to discuss with your doctor for sure.
Yeah. What could be some of the factors leading up to mental self-awareness decline? So, like, not being aware of these different thoughts or feelings.
So just when you're busy, I think this is something that happens to people kind of naturally, right? Like, you're busy doing, especially when you have, you know, as women, we tend to be juggling multiple roles, even if we're not, let's say, employed by someone else full-time, or we're not running our own business. We are, you know, full-time in charge of taking care of family members in some way or another. We always have full-time mm-hmm. jobs, and it's very easy to get into the habit of just doing the next thing that has to get done because it never ends, and not taking time for ourselves, not taking time to step back and really evaluate, you know, our feelings, just to sit with ourselves,
yeah.
and to just be and figure out, you know, am I in this moment, you know, at this point in my life, doing what I want to be doing, you know, what feels good for me, what maybe doesn't feel so good, what's off center, what can I, you know, recalibrate. It's a very easy thing to just kind of wake up and realize one day that you've just been kind of living mm-hmm. your life, not really, you know, doing life, not living it. And so, you know, for new moms, you're, you know, experiencing something that you've never experienced before. And even if this isn't your first child, maybe you've had three kids and you've never had three kids before.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a challenging experience.
Yeah, I can agree.
No, I was just going to add to what she was saying, that decline in the self-awareness
mm-hmm.
Also happens during a lot of periods of transition. And so we have to be mindful of, even if we are expecting a transition or want the transition, it could be a job promotion, it could be a move, it could be a new baby, a lot of stress and anxiety can come with transitions,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so if we're not paying attention, like April said, we just go, do, you know, to prove ourselves here, we have to prove ourselves there. So we have to be very mindful of what is going on during times of really big transitions.
Yeah. And actually, like April said, just sitting in those moments, or like taking that time to just mm-hmm. like stop, you know, because we just like to keep going, which is crazy.
Right.
So I guess to kind of have a better understanding of when we talk about these different things, like self-awareness or centering and mindfulness, what do these words even mean to us?
You know, I think the words can mean just kind of being at peace with yourself, you know, self-awareness, mindfulness, like just kind of being at peace and present
mm-hmm.
with what is going on, whatever that may be. You know, like, we cannot change certain things about life. There, a lot of times I speak out and tell my clients, like, what is in your control and what is not in your control?
Mm-hmm.
If it is absolutely not in your control, you have to throw that side away and focus on what is in your control so that you can work on making the change.
Yes.
And so with making that change, there is increased peace. You know, you're just in the present moment. You just are kind of focused on what is in your control. So for me, those words that you threw out there for us can mean peace and being more in the present.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I fully agree. Sorry, I forgot to find it. paying attention on purpose, noticing things intentionally, and without judgment. And, you know, whenever you say mindfulness, I always think about meditation. And I was in yoga class, the other day, and my teacher, she says this often actually, she was calling us to pay attention to a feeling of gratitude, like within ourselves. And she said, well, anything that you pay attention to for long enough becomes a meditation. And that's really, really true.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm in this work, I hadn't really considered it in that light before. But that, you know, it's real. It's anything that you pay attention to long enough becomes a meditation. And oftentimes we are paying attention to things that feel like they're out of our control, and our focus is on things that are not, that we're not intending to focus on. It's kind of like life is just being thrown at us rather than us taking some control back and saying, this is what I'm going to focus on,
yeah.
you know, for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, making that be, you know, an intentional practice to center and find that sense of peace and just connect with yourself. Because if we don't do that, then, you know, we do kind of just end up being, you know, driven around by life.
Yeah, I agree. So I know I was going to save some questions for the end, but this question, I feel like it fits right in. And either one of you are free to answer. But when someone says they have anxiety or suffer from anxiety, is that something that they are probably paying more attention to, that they're focusing on, rather than, I guess, let me see. I'm trying to help this make sense. So like anxiety, does that stem from something that they're trying to grasp control over when they really can't?
So, like, yes and no. So there is, you know, so there's worry, right? That, like, we all worry. It's a very normal part of life. You know, there are things to worry about, and it's adaptive because it lets us know that something in our life needs our attention. It helps to keep us alive. Mm-hmm. And then there is, you know, so it's things that we're thinking about. It's usually negative, something that could go wrong, and so we're usually trying to problem solve. And worry is something that's manageable, and again, worry is very normal. Stress is the, like, body's reaction to a stressor, to an event, to fear, to, you know, it's a physiological response. So that's, you know, your heart rate increasing, sweating, your breath becoming shallow. And we usually experience stress, you know, in bursts. Like, you know, before this call, I felt a little bit of stress, you know, or, you know, before we have a big presentation or before we have something important to do, we, you know, we have this kind of surge in adrenaline and our body goes through some stress. Mm-hmm. Chronic stress is when the body does not come down from that, when you stay in this kind of hyper aroused state. And anxiety is this combination of worry and stress. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, the mind is going, the body's going, and it's pretty, you know, consistent. There will be days that are better than others, but a person is usually experiencing, you know, kind of pervasive sense of hyperarousal. Mm. And so to answer your question about the control, you know, and I guess the other thing that's important is that, you know, when it comes to anxiety, there's usually not a threat. So when we're worried about, you know, the presentation, you know, there's a threat there. If I don't do well on this presentation, maybe I won't get the job or something like that, or I'll get fired. With anxiety, there is no real threat, but the body can't process that. The body doesn't know that there is not someone waiting around the corner to hurt you. You're just constantly feeling hyper aroused and afraid. And that's where you kind of see the OCD tendencies, like behaviors trying to, you know, prevent something from happening, even though it's not necessarily a direct correlation or a rational behavior. It's just something that makes you feel better. So in that way, there's some sort of control, but it is not a, you know, people who are dealing with true anxiety, you know, they're not causing it.
Okay.
They're not causing it.
Makes sense. That make sense. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. All right.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
Okay. And I was just gonna because I do work with a lot of people who are anxious or prone to be anxious. We have to be mindful that, you know, we can get it different ways as well. Sometimes it is genetics, you know, that's why we always take like a full assessment in the beginning, because anxiety and depression can be passed down from, you know, from generation to generation. And so sometimes it isn't that it becomes part of a personality, a little bit of your temperament, just to worry, and it has to be managed. Mm-hmm. And other times it may come on due to something that happened in our lives that was traumatic. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be abuse, but it could also be like a car accident, a dental appointment, a surgical procedure as well. So I don't think, you know, they're like focused on it. I think things happen, whether it's genetics or environmental, that cause the anxiety to become at the forefront.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Stephanie, you started Mindful Therapy Works in Atlanta. What birthed this vision for you?
Sure. It's been a long journey. And then actually, Mindful Therapy Works was born in Augusta, Georgia. I changed and relocated as of recently. And so after a massive layoff in 2015. I was part of that. I decided to take the plunge and go into private practice. You know how they say God kind of pushes you when you're thinking about doing something, he'll just kind of push you out the door.
Yep.
So that is what definitely started the private practice in 2015. I was pushed and all the doors opened. It worked out. And the original name of the business was Counseling Services. And initially, because, you know, I had just got laid off, I had to assemble, you know, things professionally, legally, I just came up with the name really quickly, you know, really quickly. And over time, I did not feel like the business name was aligned with my purpose, what I was talking about in therapy. You know, I was trying to live my life on a regular basis. So about 2 years ago, I really was like, you know what, it's time to kind of do an overhaul of the business name, make it more kind of centered with who I am currently. And I just kind of kept thinking about it, praying about it, and mindful therapy, it just came to me, and it worked, and I loved it. And I feel like I am now practicing in my in who I am, and it is aligned with what I talk about in therapy, what I offer in therapy. So it has been a process, this whole journey to Mindful Therapy Works.
Nice. How long have you been in your business, Mindful Therapy Works?
So the private practice is almost 5 years old.
Wow, that's good.
It'll be 5 on May 20th, 2020.
Nice. Look at you. That's dope. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And April, you've done counseling in the States and abroad. Does the approach change depending on the culture of your client?
Yes and no. So, you know, people are people, right? And we all want the same thing, really. We want to be loved. We want to have, you know, live lives with respect and dignity. And we all, at the end of the day, really just want the same thing. We want a sense of purpose. And so the approach doesn't really change. There's always that unconditional positive regard and dealing on strength. But at the same time, everyone is different, and a lot of people are part of many different cultures. I think we typically think about a person's culture as like being primarily their ethnicity, but there's, you know, sexual identity, there's religious identity, there's economic background. It's generational identity, and so good counseling takes into consideration all of those things, and you really just meet the person where they are and take time to understand their personal culture, their personal values, and any societal pressures they might be dealing with that are contributing to their strength or resiliency.
Nice. And what are some of the steps for leading someone to mindfulness? How do each of you achieve that with your clients?
See, what are some of the steps? I think just starting really small and really basic. Like, people think you have to do these grand gestures, you know, to start incorporating mindfulness. Like, they have to take a trip to Bali and do, you know, course yoga, or I need to be on the beach, you know. So a lot of times people think we have to do these elaborate things, and I always say you have to think of the most basic thing to start incorporating in your life, to start living mindfully and presently. So even, you know, eating, there's mindful eating. Mm-hmm. Many times we're eating the meal and we're not really present. We're doing something else. We think it's a great time to catch up on some text messages or do social media. That would be a great place just to start, is just to kind of say, I'm just eating this meal and I'm going to enjoy it and focus on all of my senses and not do anything else. So really kind of small, basic things. Like, you can be mindful in the shower. You can be mindful while brushing your teeth. You can be mindful while walking, just being present. So I always start with the basics. And of course, you can add, you know, I'm going to take up a yoga meditation, yoga practice, meditation practice. You can add those things, but it does not have to start there if you don't want to.
Same, right on. It's very, very simple, small steps. When you explain to people really what mindfulness is, sometimes it sounds oversimplified, but like practicing in session with people is really helpful, and it might feel weird to people to begin with, but being able to do it in session with clients People find it like less intimidating, less daunting, and they're more willing to practice it in their own lives and find it incredibly helpful.
Yeah. Do you find that your clients that are moms have a struggle adapting to this routine?
Mm-hmm. I do, because I feel like moms are always on autopilot. Moms like to multitask, you know, like just kind of be all over the place, all the things for all the people. So it is really hard for them to kind of just take a moment for themselves, you know what I mean? And like, mm-hmm. just like I said, just being mindful in the shower, like that is your time. Mm-hmm. Even if you're only going to be in there 5 minutes, like let that be the best 5 minutes that you can have for the rest of the day. So I just find that, you know, moms have a hard time kind of letting go of the multitasking and doing everything and doing all the things and not taking, you know, 5-10 minutes for themselves when it does present, when the opportunity does present itself.
Yeah, I agree.
They almost feel guilty almost, you know, like it's almost like a guilt thing, like, oh, I shouldn't take 15 minutes to myself. Like it's mm-hmm. a lot of mom guilt.
Yes.
I see on a regular basis in the practice, and it's really just the, you know, guilt about doing anything for themselves first.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's this idea that like I'll get to it. I'll be able to take care of myself when I get this done,
mm-hmm.
and it's never ending.
Yeah.
It's like there's always the next thing that has to be done for the family. So, yeah, I agree
yep.
wholeheartedly with that.
Yep.
You know.
I've been there. Definitely. Yes. I had to literally right. just
and we don't
stop.
Understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we stop and when we refuel, that's when we're better for everyone.
Exactly.
That's when we're a little less irritable. You know what I mean? A little less snappy. We're able to go with the flow because we took those breaks for ourselves and we're able to recenter.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women deal with multiple stressors that block them from becoming balanced. Do either of you have any exercises that a mom can do on her way to work or before picking up the kids at the end of the day, or just something really quick that they can do to reclaim their minds?
Okay. So I'll say to claim their minds, like affirmations or coping statements, you know, for starting the day, mm-hmm. you know, like everything can work out. Whatever the day throws at me today, I can handle. Like a simple affirmation like that to say to yourself in the car or when you wake up or when you know it's going to be a busy, you know, a little busy, hectic day. So affirmations, whatever works for you to kind of help you get in the right mindset for your day, I feel is very helpful that moms can do, you know, in the car while you're waiting in line, just that positive self-talk, kind of catch any negativity and reword it using some kind of an I statement. Mm. That's something I would suggest. And for me, breathing, your breath always recalibrates you. So just be mindful of how you're breathing. You know, you're breathing really quickly. And if not, there are plenty of exercises that I teach my clients, like nostril breathing, square breathing, belly breathing, that you can do to the brain recognizes a breath is like everything is okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just kind of researching different types of breathing methods and seeing which one you like, which one works for you. You can do those in the car. You can do those in the carpool line. You can do them pretty much wherever. But I feel like, you know, breathing is an opportunity to recenter yourself because it also, you know, brings the focus inward. Like you're actually listening to your breath, breathing in, breathing out. So I would say those two things, affirmations and breathing for busy working moms on the go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love all those things. And I do. I the only other thing I think a gratitude practice is always super helpful.
Oh, yes, it is.
And like in the morning before you get out of bed and you're contemplating, like, I could just have 2 more minutes of sleep, take those 2 minutes, incorporate some of those breathing exercises that Stephanie was talking about. And just make a see how many things you can list that you're grateful for. in 2 minutes and breathe into each one of those things. Mm. That is like, to me, a super powerful experience. And it only takes a couple minutes in the morning, and then you get, you know, the rest of you to start off your day that way is just very different from, you know, hitting the floor back into, you know, the dreads and the stress without taking that time for yourself.
Most definitely. I agree with that. Gratitude, like writing it down and really focusing on it and reflecting it, it's definitely like a mood booster. Like everything just changes and you can wake up and literally feel invincible. I don't know. I love doing that. So what is the most important thing you want everyone to leave with when it comes to clearing your mind and finding balance?
Mm-hmm. I just want everyone to know that it is within your reach. You know, it can happen. It does not have to be something like, oh, my nerves are bad, or I've always been so irritated, easily frustrated. That's just who I am. You know, if you want things to change internally and mentally, that is in your control, and you can make those changes and not to feel defeated by, you know, the ebbs and flows of life. And if you're able to, you know, get to that on your own, wonderful. But if you can't and you need some assistance, you need a professional person like myself or April, there is no shame in that. Like, we also have the tools that we can give you to achieve that mental sanity, that mental peace. And, you know, therapy is always an option if you feel like you cannot achieve that on your own. But change can happen, and you don't have to feel stuck in any anxiety, in any excessive stress, in any depression. You do not have to feel stuck in that place. There is relief, and it starts within.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Amen. I have absolutely nothing to add.
Thank you, I'll take it.
I mean, that's nothing like turns my heart more than like knowing that people are like suffering needlessly, and it just you know, that's why we're here. And it is, you know, we all know lots of people who are like, well, this is just the way that I am, this is just the way that I've always been. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're suffering, and it doesn't have to be that way. And so I'm giving you the high fist bump stuff.
Nice.
The coronavirus elbow.
Right.
Elbow, yes.
So I have one last question for the both of you. Being therapists, how do you prepare yourselves to, I guess, see your clients? Because I feel like, wouldn't that be a lot on you as far as the things that you have to help them with or talk to them about? How do you not take those things and, I guess, hold on to them or help not let it affect your day-to-day lives?
I'll say that this, you know, this is work that you don't enter into lightly. Mm-hmm. You understand when you're going to school that it's a job that requires a certain level of emotional energy. And that there's going to be an exchange of energies on some level in the work. And you learn ways to set healthy boundaries for yourself and do the same things that you're teaching other people how to do, really. Mm-hmm. You know, we're people. And I think that what the world, you know, needs more of is our ability to, you know, recognize humanity in each other and, you know, to do that in a way that gives dignity to the other person, but that, you know, doesn't empty your own cup. Mm-hmm. And so, I love the work that I do, and that love keeps me wanting to stay mentally healthy myself so that I can continue to do the work. And, you know, and having good connections, the same thing that we teach other people is a really big part of it. It's why, you know, I've stayed in touch with Stephanie for all these years. She's just an incredible person. And so, you know, being able to stay connected and talk to her, that is a big part of, you know, my own personal self-care.
Nice. How about you, Stephanie?
Yes, April. Talking to April is part of my self-care. but I will say I honestly, I do start like most of my therapeutic days just kind of in prayer, asking for guidance, asking that I am listening, you know, and asking that whatever's coming out is helping and edifying my client. So I always do, you know, some kind of like a release, like this is out of my control. What comes out of my mouth, you know, is out of my control. It's, I think about it, but I'm not going to know what I'm going to say word for word. So I kind of pray for guidance for just kind of the day, the session, therapy sessions. That's what I'm trying to say. And in between sessions, let's say it's a heavy, heavy client caseload, I will stretch. I will walk. I will get some water. I will do those breathing exercises that I just told you about just to recalibrate and recenter myself for the next person, because I don't want to bring anything from that previous session to the next session. So yeah. I'll do things in between. I'll, you know, allow myself. That's why I don't schedule like super tight back to back, because I want to kind of be my best person, best self for the next person. And at the end of the day, I know that I keep stress, you know, we all keep stress in our bodies. I keep mine in my shoulders. So at the end of the day, I do have to find ways to release it. Mm-hmm. So once again, you know, I'm doing yoga in the evening. I'm going for a walk. I literally have to like release the day so that I can have a good evening with my spouse, with my sisters, whoever I'm getting up with for the evening. I have to kind of release it in some kind of either the bedtime routine or an exercise routine or something like that. But I also agree with April in terms of the boundaries. How many people do you want to see a day? What types of clients speak to you? What kind of breaks do you need in between? Just really listening to how I feel after a day's work to know what I need to do for myself.
Nice. I love it. Good. Yeah, because that was always like a question, like, how do they go into this? Because that could just sometimes just be so much, you know, for you to take in. But I guess also not scheduling your clients back to back too gives you that moment. So, yeah, nice. Well, thank you, ladies, so much for sharing and talking to me as we help our listeners and our moms get back to just centering themselves, you know, being more intentional and being more mindful of how they're spending their time. So I thank you. And where can they probably find more information on you, if not on social media?
Okay, I am. You can visit.
Go ahead, girl.
You sure? Okay. You can visit me on my website, which is www.mindfultherapyworks.com. I'm also on social media at Mindful Therapy Works. I can be found on Instagram and Facebook. And I have a Stephanie B. Nichols LCSW page on YouTube as well. So those are the four different places. So if anyone needs to contact me, if they're interested in therapy or if they're interested in, you know, presentations, workshops, I'm very easily reached within, you know, any of that.
Yep, and I would say anyone in the like greater Jacksonville, Florida area that's interested in any workshop or training, reach me at Hume, my last name, LPC@gmail.com.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much. And please stay safe while we are in our, I guess, Rona break. And I will talk to you all soon.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Thank
yes,
you.
You're
thank
welcome. You. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or hit follow and love on Spotify. And to stay connected with Mom Space & Co. and connect with today's guests, follow us on Instagram, tweet us on Twitter, and download the Mom Space & Co. app in the Apple App Store and in the Google Play Store.